Hey, everybody. Let me start by saying it is great to be back on the same time zone with all of you. Tamara and I just got back from Madhya Pradesh, India on Monday night. And those of us, you who know us well, know that we've been supporting church planting teams working among three unreached people groups, the Bhil people, the Powari people, and the Bansheda people. And we've been at this, Tamara, for 20 years, but how fulfilling it was really to not only see what the missionaries did. The Powari, there's 600 villages, and it's 600 among over 600,000 villages in India that don't have churches. And now in the last 10 years among the Powari, we've seen 120 churches started in communities that had none. We were rejected in 60 villages, and some of those 60 are opening back up to the gospel. The Bhil, we have even more churches than we have in the Powari. And then the Bansheda is really touching because it's the only tribe in all of India where parents had been offering their girls at age 13 for sex work. And we've been working there 10 years. And to see girls who were 20 that we rescued at 11 saying, "My goodness, my life is so changed. They're going to be stewardesses. They're going to be nurses. They're going to be pharmacists." I mean, it just, man alive. And to see churches now where there were no churches, no Christians, that's powerful. But you know what? Our topic today is not how to build mission partnerships. We need to do that sometime. But our topic today is how to bring out the best in our people without burning them out. And Easter's a big time for us. So I know there are a lot of pastors, probably where I was years ago, where I felt like, man, everything went so good, but now I got to deal with stuff that happened to my teams that made everything go so good at Easter time. So I think this is going to be a really, really highly helpful webinar today. We're going to talk about how to bring out the best in people without burning them out. So, Tamara, thank you for being with me today.
You're welcome. And hey, everybody, it's so great to be with you today. Thanks for joining us. It's great to be back in Texas and in the US. You appreciate so much what you have here when you go someplace like India with so many unreached and just the dark places. I think the last webinar actually was watched from our hotel room in India. Pastor Rick Burke went with us. We sure enjoyed having him with us for the trip to India. He pastors in Claremore, Oklahoma. But we've been going to India every year for a number of years. But because of COVID, here and there, it was almost 5 years since we had been there. But it was really awesome to go again and to see just the fruit of the work that's going on there. But we're really looking forward to today's webinar with you. I think it's a subject that's helpful to all of us as pastors and leaders.
Yeah, so Tamara, you and I didn't make up this quote, but we sure identified with it. And that is somebody said that we're going to get tired in ministry, but we never want to get tired of ministry. And so we've tried to make that our mantra, being in ministry now for nearly 35 years in the same church. But we want to be able to say the same thing about our people, that sometimes they may get a little bit tired in it, but we never want them to get tired of it. And it is more difficult today because as generations change and perspectives change, I don't know if you heard about this, but following COVID, there's something called the Great Resignation. And what that means is, like in 2022, 4.5 million people a month were quitting their jobs at the height of the Great Resignation. They're moving from one job to another. And even just this last January, it's still 3.5 million. So we're just dealing with the fact that people are moving around. It's not easy to keep them committed to the teams. A church is a volunteer organization. And if we think about it, we even see it in society. I mean, you and I love this Mexican restaurant. We look for beef when we get back from India, and preferably beef served in a Mexican restaurant. But anyway, so we literally had a guy have to shut down our most popular restaurant for a month because he couldn't keep the workers doing their part. And I think it's not just us fighting it as pastors, but a lot of people are fighting it. So we're going to talk today about things we can do spiritually, things we can do structurally. Going to be a really, really practical webinar today.
Yes, and do I get to welcome our new members right now?
Yeah, before we dive in, why don't you do that?
Yes, and we do want to welcome. We're so always so glad when new pastors and leaders join us. So we want to welcome them today. Hoyt Chastain from Clearview Missionary Baptist Church in Verbena, Alabama. Gerard Cesar from Gulf Coast Community Church, St. Petersburg, Florida. Edward Douglas, living Covenant Church in Ozark, Alabama. Jason Light Church in Midlothian, Carl Fontaine. They worked with us for a little while here. Just love them. Passionate Life Church in Littleton, Colorado. Craig Kruger in First Presbyterian Church in Hillsboro, Texas. Tom Mulholland. I'm sorry, I messed that one up. Heritage Baptist Church. Oh, in Gallipolis, Ohio. Rick Myers, Living Waters Assembly of God in Caledonia, Mississippi. Gary Senf in Trinity Assembly of God, Lutherville, Maryland. Tim Zanernack in Kern City Community Church, Bakersfield, California. David Malali in New Life Fountain Ministries, Eldoret, Kenya. Marco Mascarenhas, I'm sorry if I messed your names up, from Brazil. We're so glad to have you. Azalea Ortega, Movement Evangelistic Apostolic Church in Puerto Rico. And Quabena Okai Twabeno, Kingdom Upon Hill Church, Hull United Kingdom. So we are so, so thrilled to have all of you. Welcome. We're glad you've joined us. We look forward to getting to know you and serve you in the days ahead. And then, Jim, we do a partner shout out, and we want to do one to our friends, Pastor Gary and Pam Hart. They're significant church local connectors, and man, they pastor a great church in Great Falls, Montana. Beautiful area. They pastor Victory Church, been there since 1991. We love them, appreciate the awesome work they're doing in their community. And I know they're new grandparents, and I'm sure they're loving that right now. But Pam and Gary Hart, we love you. Appreciate you.
Yeah, that's awesome, Tamara. I don't know how you got. I think you got the toughest names ever, and you did that with grace. So thank you for doing that. You know, the Significant Church Network, as you all know, is a network of pastors, you know, led by fellow pastors, serving pastors and their families. So we're so appreciative for that happening, because God needs us to do that. I mean, we can be pastoring our churches, but if pastors aren't pastored, if pastors don't have fathers and brothers and sisters around them, man, that's not good. So we appreciate all of you who do so much. You know, Tamara, it's not easy to bring out the best in people without burning them out. So the next 30, 35 minutes, we're going to talk about that. And I just want to start with the scripture. Isaiah 40, 31 says, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They'll soar on wings like eagles, they'll run and not grow weary, and they'll walk and not faint. And I think the two key words really are hope and the Lord. You know, hope's a refresher. I've been times whenever my heart just wasn't very refreshed. And for me, I'm not the kind of person that can just push through and feel like it's going to happen regardless. I'm definitely a without the Lord, I can do nothing kind of person. So there are times I just have to really let God refresh my heart. And it's amazing how different things look whenever the Lord refreshes your heart in hope. So hope is a great refresher. And it's not easy sometimes as a pastor, because I know every pastor can identify with this. You know, somebody walks in and says, you know, Pastor, I just need to resign from ministry for a while because my life's out of balance. And I mean, what you feel like saying is, well, I appreciate you putting my life more out of balance while you're getting yours in balance, because who's going to take care of everything? But it's not that easy. We've got to pastor people in real life giving ways. But I think it does come down to knowing what God wants you to do in this season. Some pastors try to do too much. Is motivated by fear. They're trying to accomplish two or three seasons of stuff in one season. That's not good. Some pastors spend too long being discouraged. And I think it really does start with our hearts staying fresh in the Lord. I know you just hosted a ladies conference with, I think, 1,147 ladies and massive amounts of volunteers. So talk to me about how you do that. How do you just stay fresh?
First of all, I have had a lot of good help and good from good people. And as you know, my strength is not administrative strength. I don't have that bent. It's relational. And Jim, you described my leadership style as this. I make friends and I have fun. And from there, I find my leaders. and I find dollars. And, you know, and even though this is different, we're all made different. And even though it's a lot different than how you lead, you mentioned it's important that leadership involves fun and fellowship. You know, when people are having a good time, they're going to stick with you. But it involves the presence of the Lord, like you're talking about, because we're doing it for Him and we do it in His strength. There's just a fresh that comes by being connected to her. We can all be a small part. We say this often, a small part of making something big happen for God. And none of us have all of it, but we all have something to bring to the table. And when we just stay in our lane and bring what we have, and when we have people that are part of that, they have ownership, and we help make things happen for God, it's so fulfilling and so rewarding. You know, one thing, I've never tried to do everything myself, because there would not be a lot done if I did. But I love to get other people involved, using their gifts, leading and teaching and ministering. You know, every week, you know, our ladies teach in Bible study. They lead prayer groups. When we have women's events that you mentioned, they're working, they're leading, they're sharing. And it's so much more gets done when we do it together. And we appreciate and value what others have to give. So there's just a refreshing that stays when you stay connected to God, and when you stay connected in fellowship and in, in vision with each other.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say this, that I think what I've learned being with you is that leadership doesn't start with org charts. You know, it's the third thing. It starts with your relationship with the Lord, and that you're accomplishing what He's called you to do in this season. And He just has different purposes for different seasons. In the Old Testament, the fire would stay over the camp, right? And it would stay over because God wants to talk to you. That's the season. And then it would begin to move. And it's because God had hopes He wanted to bring forth in this season. And when you aren't in touch with that, you don't have the faith to take the big steps. Like Israel, they got to the edge of the promised land, didn't have the faith to enter in. So it really doesn't start with org charts. It starts with our prayer life. It starts with our relationships with other people. And when we get that straight, then it goes a long way to not burning people out, because we're relational and we're in the presence of the Lord. But let's just talk about just some things spiritually. I think this is a real practical thought, that we have to lead with a spirit of encouragement and not obligation. You know, that can be tough for us as pastors, because we really do live such sacrificial lives. People call us on a minute's notice. They don't do it to a doctor. You know, you get a answering machine with a doctor, but people feel like if a pastor isn't on call all the time, that it's bad, you know. And so we really do live, I'm not trying to be a baby, but we live sacrificial lives. And Tamara, you grew up in a pastor's home. And I think one reason our four kids were able to answer their call to ministry was because you really understood this reality. They were allowed to be kids. You encouraged them to be kids. And, you know, and of course, it was age appropriate. I was the youngest child. And those of you who know youngest children, I mean, we can slow down the growing up process. But I watched you with our kids. And I think this holds true for the church, that you just don't want to raise up a bunch of volunteers with a spirit of obligation. I know God gives burdens. I know God gives calls. There's times to talk about that. But one of the things I appreciate about the church that we took over, and I want to give Gary and Pat Upham a shout out, if you know them.
For sure.
In fact, text them and tell them how awesome they were. Because they led the church in the presence of the Holy Spirit, the church was ready for us whenever we came.
Yeah, that's true. And Jim, I want to say, because you mentioned seasons, it's so important that we, you know, like the scripture says, the men of Issachar understood their times and they knew what to do. You know, we just got to know our season that we're in. There was a time when my season was raising kids, and, you know, you were being refreshed in God and you were being refreshed to lead your family. But there are seasons you don't do everything you do, but you know what God wants you to do. I think that was really good. But yeah, when we came here 34 years ago, and you did a great job when you came as pastor. I was never part of a church from the beginning. So I watched you, and I could give you credit. Here's a new pastor. You didn't come in and, you know, you didn't try to change anything right away, but you respected what had been done, and you focused on prayer and how God wanted to lead the church into the next season. In fact, after a few weeks, you were concerned because we weren't seeing, you know, the salvation nations we wanted to see. And you had always preached on the mission field. A lot of people got saved. You know, you'd preach at Lakewood. Lots of people got saved. So you knew how to bring people in. So I remember that time you fasted and God gave you Luke 14, the parable of the banquet, the great banquet. And it talks about in that passage, how God's house gets filled. And this was so clear and so good. You told the people you'd always do your part to prepare a great word, a great meal for the banquet, but you needed them to reach out and to into their world. And their part was to invite. It was to bring, it was to compel those who, you know, who were poor, blind, lame, and crippled. And they were poor, you know, needed resource in God's truth. The blind couldn't see what God wanted to do. The lame, they didn't have the strength to walk into what God had. And the crippled needed to be healed, those that needed redemption. And so it was just so clear. We saw God really wanted us to bring us together as a congregation. We saw how that worked. And, you know, since then, God is so good to just lead us every step of the way. But since then, you know, we've seen a lot happen, and it was really great leadership by the Holy Spirit and by you.
Well, I appreciate you being so kind. I mean, it wasn't always easy. And, you know, I did feel like the people needed to know they understood them before, you know, we started making changes. But I think the other part of it to me is just that Jesus didn't say we'd build his church. He said, I'll build my church and the gates of hell won't prevail against it. And getting back to what we talked about, when you start with prayer first, people second, org charts third, I mean, people could tell when God's talking to you. And when God's talking to you, it doesn't feel like an obligation. It feels like an opportunity to do something to please the heart of God. And I know, I mean, I've pastored long enough to know there are people who put their demands into forms of prophecies. They put their demands into forms of letters. And as a pastor, you just have to know and develop a reputation for hearing God. And if it's not like the biggest move forward season in your life, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're close to God, nobody wants to move the church forward more than Jesus does. So when he talks to you, that's when it really is time to move things forward. The second thing is, after it's opportunity, not obligation, I think bringing clarity to people without being controlling is really, really important. And you saw me work on that because I was raised in a coach's home, you know? And I was used to the fact that there were five people breathing down your neck that wish they had the position. So the coach could be kind of controlling. For church volunteers, it doesn't work that way. If you come across controlling as opposed to bringing clarity with vision, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, no. And you made a lot of great changes because you're a coach by nature. You love making people better. You love developing people. And in the Strength Finders test, if y'all have ever done that, your top five strengths are achiever, strategic, focus, arranger, and competition.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I want to be around me all the time listening to those.
But then our backgrounds, you know, are just what they are. We all come from different backgrounds and they play into who we are. But Romans 12 says it takes time to nurture a new nature. And God wants to bring that forth in all of our lives. And he's had to change me so many ways in the last 30, 40 years. He's had to change you. And, you know, but I saw you do that. You allow God to change parts of your personality to make you a better leader and developer of people. And you're just great at keeping the vision clear and helping our people see what God sees out ahead. And, you know, I tell you this, but often in the offering, the vision offering segment of our service, you use that to celebrate and bring clarity. And that keeps the vision before our people in a very, you know, exciting way. And half the time, I don't even know you're taking the offering until you say, you know, pass the buckets. But it helps you want to give because of the good that's happening and then what's on the horizon. You keep the vision out there for us to, you know, move toward.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just something you learn. My dad was, you know, he was a good leader, but there's these things called yogiisms. I don't know if you know what they are, but baseball guys do. Yogi Bear would kind of say things backward that made a lot of sense. And one day he came into a stadium. The Yankees were playing on the road, and people didn't come because they didn't want to see their home team get killed by the Yankees. And Yogi Bear looked up in the stands and he said, "Man, if they don't come, we can't stop them." It's that way with people. If they don't want to volunteer, I don't care what you say, you know.
Right.
And that's why it's so good to ask yourself, does it feel like an opportunity or an obligation? Am I bringing clarity to people? Like, they all want to have this children's program. They all want to have this youth program. They all want to see the neighbors reach like this. Or do they feel like I'm controlling? I'm just trying to build my church. And I know that may sound like small things, but at the end of the day, I think those are the big things. So I didn't want to get into structure today without hitting spirit. And here's the third one, and we'll finish the spirit part with this. And that is build fellowship and prioritize fellowship while fulfilling the call. Now, you've been real kind to me, but if I'm honest, I didn't feel like I did that great off the beginning. And it's because you remember, I wondered if I could be a pastor. And mm-hmm. Our church doubled the first year, but I felt like, man, it's so demanding. I don't know if I can be the kind of dad I want to be. God, are you sure I'm called to do this? And it was a struggle because, you know, we have relationships to build at home, but we really do have to set up that Moses model structure so that people are having fellowship, because people, you know, they've got a lot going on in their life. And because they have a lot going on in their life, if we don't have a positive, great feeling, then we're going to burn our people out. It's just the nature of life. People need to be refreshed. In fact, I thought of this. There's four major focuses of the church in the New Testament, right? Worship. Mm-hmm. Our people should experience the worth of God. Discipleship. Our people should be growing more like Jesus and growing in the knowledge of God. But number three is fellowship. Our people should be loving one another the way Jesus taught us to love one another. And I think that in your teams, that's where you practice those 59 one another commands. Yeah. And if that's happening, people are going to be refreshed. But if it doesn't, they're not going to be refreshed. And I think I've even seen that this year because Easter's early, right? So we came out of the gate, we started with a series that gave people a hunger for worship, a hunger to have a better spiritual life. But then it felt like, you know, it wasn't long till we were shooting, trying to get everything organized for Easter. And I can't wait just to have a good fellowship series on the back end of this, because people need fellowship.
They do. They do. And our church, you know, they're hungry for it. Actually, they're hungry for community. But fortunately, our team does a great job of having a plan in place for, you know, after Easter. Faith Family Day always follows Easter by three to five weeks, depending on when Easter is. It's a great way for people and their families to connect. You know, there's free food. we use food trucks that help us recoup some of our costs, but there are games and competitions, entertainment, and just hangout picnic kind of time together. And then we have something similar in the fall, which I'm sure a lot of you do, our fall festival. We also do free coffee every service in the Connection Center just to foster fellowship. And, you know, I know, Jim, y'all are talking about adding lunches after service to give people time to connect. And that's always big. People love to connect around food. But we've all heard that family and friends who pray together stay together. That's true, right? But it's also true that families that play together stay together. So we know there's just such an important element in the fellowship and the connecting and the community of our church.
Yeah, I hate to be too sound too unspiritual about this, but when I think about our kids, I mean, we prayed with them, and I know it brought security to them, especially prayers before they went to bed at night. You know, that just makes a kid feel secure. But honestly, they remember us playing with them. And that's what they loved about their childhood. If they talk about what they loved, I'm not saying we don't have the other moments where mom heard dad, God, dad heard God. Those kind of things are so important. But play is a huge part of everything. And I think sometimes we don't budget that as much as we need to in our thing that, you know, you show up and you're a volunteer and there's coffee ready for you, not just the people coming to the church. You know, I know one pastor who said that he trained his people, and I think it's Jay Coleman, who said that his people know that before service, he's in the lobbies for them. He's not in the lobbies for visitors. Yeah. And so if they need him, he can find him, because afterwards he wants to be able to talk to visitors. But it's just so important that, just to summarize this and go into the second part, that if we're dealing with a burnout issue in our church, I think we can really spiritually go back to, is it obligation or do people feel like it's an opportunity to be a part of what we're doing? Are we being controlling? Or are we just bringing clarity? Hey, we all want to have this great church. And here's, if we all do our little part, we can do it. And then number three, are we really building the friendships that people need to survive long in ministry? And that's a big part of our, you know, our passion for Significant Church. Pastors shouldn't be tired. We should have relationships with each other that keep life refreshed. But let's switch over. Let's talk about how to fight it structurally now. And Tim, let me just share this as we begin, that in a poll I heard somebody did recently, they asked pastors to describe themselves, and they gave them these options. Number one, are you exhausted to the point that you don't think you can go on? Number two, are you tired, but not to the point of distress? Number three, are things pretty normal? Number four, of course, normal might be good or bad, right? But number four, are things really good? And then number five, things have never been better. So when they got done with the poll with, you know, 1,000 plus pastors, about 15% sadly said that they were at the point of number one, where they didn't feel like they could go on anymore. And 58% said they were at number two, that they were really tired, but not to the point of distress. So, of course, again, we don't know what normal is. Only 3% said that things were really good, and only another 3% said that things never felt better. So really only 6% said things were really good or they never felt better. So I think there's a lot of pastors listening today that are at number two, at least. They're tired, but not to the point of distress. And they can think, this doesn't really work. But you know what? It does work. It does work to make sure the spirit of your church stays the way we just described it. It does work to live for the hope of the Lord and not to let the expectations of other people drive you and to steal your joy. Right. And then there's just structural things that we need to do. And let's start talking about some of those.
Yeah, I think we've probably all been at one of those points at one time or another. But anyway, it's so important that we get to a place where we live in balance. And you're great, Jim, at numbers and statistics in our church, and pastors have benefited from that. And, you know, that will really be obvious when you get to the structure part of this. You amaze me with how well you think about things like that, because I'm so not that. But we're talking about burnout. And I want to share a quick story that I remember growing up. And my father pastored, and most all of his life he pastored, but there was a season when he traveled quite a bit and spoke. And in one of the seasons where he was traveling and holding crusades, he had his mailing, you know, list back then. He was keeping up, and everything was going and blowing and just busy, but he was getting worn down, worn out, like we're talking about. But one night he had a dream, and I want to just share this dream really quick. But he was driving his car, and Jesus was sitting shotgun next to him in this dream. He knew it because it was Jesus, because when he raised his arm, he saw his white robe. And so Jesus began to point to the left as he was in the car. And when he did, my dad drove the car began to drive the car toward the left, and it was a mountain. So as he drove toward that mountain, it began to a road began to clear and begin to make a road through that mountain. So he got to the very top of the mountain, and when he did, he saw three crosses on top. And as soon as he saw those crosses, he jumped out of the car, ran to pick up the middle cross, which he knew was Jesus' cross. And he said he bent down to pick it up, thinking it was going to be so heavy that it was just going to be, you know, almost too hard to pick up. But he said when he lifted it, it was like styrofoam.
Wow.
It was so light that it kind of lifted him off the ground. And Jesus spoke to him and he said this. He said, it's not my cross that's wearing you out. It's your programs. So Daddy got rid of what he needed to, and he began to travel light. And he realized he was doing a bunch of stuff that God hadn't called him to do that was wearing him out. But he realized that Jesus' yoke really was easy and his burden was light. But sometimes we just get, you know, doing what we think we need to do, and things get heavy, and we have to just go to Jesus and get our yoke, you know, get our yoke right that we're to carry, because it's always right. It's always light. It's always right with him.
Yeah. For those that don't know, your dad is, some probably don't know that your dad was John Osteen, the late John Osteen. So he built a pretty good church.
You know? He did. Yeah, he did. And that was just a small season.
It just comes back to some of what we're talking about, that like for us, I'm glad that we learned to tell people that if we don't have a leader, we don't have a ministry. Yeah. I remember when we came down here, your dad told me, you know, Jim, when they see how good Tamara is with with children. They're going to want her to be the answer to this and be the answer to that. And you just tell them, I didn't marry her to be the children's pastor. I married her to be my wife, you know, and she can play a volunteer role. And we'll talk about how many hours maybe that is later, but she can't play all the roles people want her to. And we just have to really be careful about letting the expectation of people manage us. And I just want to thank those of you who are talking to us on the chat today. You know, Pastor George Belderama, but thank you so much for taking the time to pour into me today. I greatly appreciate this venue today. Tamara, that's why we do it. I mean, we've been at this 35 years, and we've been at it with 80 families, and we've been at it with 1,600 families, and we just want to give back. We want to take time, and we want to give back to people what's been given to us, and maybe some things we wish were given to us too, because we're parents. We're not perfect parents, so we tell our kids all the time, we gave you a lot. We're sorry I couldn't give you everything, right? But we want to help pastors all we can. So let's talk structurally. Here's the first thing I will say about structure is that we need to give platform time to what brings pleasant vision and unity to the congregation. You mentioned this, about the offering just a minute ago, and that's so important to do that. And we'll do it this week. We'll talk about India, and it just won't be about the courage and the sacrifice of our missionaries, though they're amazing. I mean, for those who don't know, every single one of them are beaten in the villages where they go. Many of them have been put in jail, and they're reaching the most difficult parts of the world. But we'll talk to our congregation about how much they love them, because they couldn't go if they weren't sent. And so it'll be something that just brings a pleasantness into the congregation. Psalm 133, verse 1 says, how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. And of course, we're getting ready to head into a big political season right now. And it's not going to be easy to keep unity within our churches. Tim, you know, I have my undergraduate degree in history. And so, I really respect the founding fathers. I respect the pastors who were part of like the Black Robe Regiment that really helped us fight the Revolutionary War. But a lot of people don't know this, that we had a great awakening when we had a great revolution. But by 1790, church attendance plummeted to under 10% in the United States. And it's because the loyalists and the patriots started fighting in church. And there's a great writing about it by one of the professors at Wheaton. But just imagine, you don't know the nation's going to be great. All you know is I lost my son. All I know is the sacrifice that we made. And the loyalists were saying, we should never fought this war. Look at everything we've lost. The patriots were mad at them because, no, we had to fight this war. And it's just important that a pastor is the one that consistently gets up and keeps the church pleasant and unified.
Yeah. Right. That's so good, Jim. I won't take long on this, but our church attendance is now beyond where it was pre-COVID. But it took a lot of work. I saw you working really hard with our staff. It's a big part of the reason is, you know, it's part of the reason is the 490 people that were baptized. But you said during that crazy COVID time that you were going to pastor people in the middle who were reasonable in the midst of everything going on. You know, there was so much going on during that time that you weren't going to let our church get hijacked by people on different sides of the conflict that would get us off track. And I thought that was really good because you remain really steady as a pastor, like a lot of the pastors who are listening today. And it just brought such a
security. So many good local connectors. That's one of my biggest visions, having local connectors that help pastors. And if you're a local connector watching today, I just want to give you a shout out. Thank you for loving pastors.
Yes, for sure. But it was so good for our flock. Just felt sheep like to feel secure. And that was a big part of us being where we are today. And it's just an important part of pastoring, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, here's the second thing I want to talk about is not just keeping things pleasant and filled with unity in your church, but also we need to give platform time to what leads our people into balance as they serve in volunteer ministry. I think sometimes we're thinking about how much more we want to get done as pastors instead of how we're going to have more people getting things done. And I'd encourage pastors to make that adjustment. I don't think most of us do that naturally. We're thinking about the Lord's work and how much we want to see get done. But when you change that and you think, I want to see more people feeling like ministry is an opportunity and love and doing ministry whenever they come to my church. That's a significant mindset shift that you have. And I don't always recommend books on the webinar, but I want to recommend one today. It's a book called Crucial Conversations. And I love the book because it talks about when do we need to have a crucial conversation? Well, number one, when there's strong emotion about something. And a lot of pastors like peace, so they turn into avoiders if they're not careful. But your people have strong emotion about what kind of children's programs they have, what kind of youth programs, something that happened this week. And again, if you just want to get a lot done, as opposed to thinking about everybody being happy who's getting things done, everybody being fulfilled, you're probably going to get into trouble. And when they see you care about them having a great experience, one thing we do is every month we celebrate a dream team person. And we don't just celebrate people, but we celebrate values. And yeah. One of the values is people who serve with balance. We don't really celebrate people, and we see them. This is a funny story. I didn't plan on telling it, but when I was a high school baseball player, there was this coach who he said about this guy named Walt. He said, "Man, he's always over here volunteering to work on the field." And then about 10 minutes later, his wife came and just started screaming at him. And we all started laughing in the dugout. And we said, "Now we know why he's always over here working on the field." But you don't want people that way. You don't want people serving and their life isn't healthy. You want people serving and their life is healthy. So the book, Crucial Conversations, mm-hmm. I think they're going to put it on the screen. But it talks about where there's an emotion, there needs to be discussion. And the second thing is that most people, they love what they do, but they just need somebody who can sit and talk well amidst a difficult emotion. So again, we do that through the Moses model, right? We do it through not letting any teams get bigger than five or six people. We try to get a leader for every five or six people. We do it through meeting regularly with our captains, because our captains are the ones that keep all the leaders working well in the life of the church.
Yeah. And Jim, you say often, or you said before at least, that what you appreciate appreciates, right? It just makes a lot of sense. And that's why we do want to give platform time to what we believe in. And that's balance. And we do a Dream Team Honor once a month in our services. And that's always so, so good, because we can highlight what we're aiming for, and we're aiming for balance. And I know that you won't let staff nominate people that have burned out volunteering. They're, you know, just burning the candles on both ends, because that's not what we want to highlight. That's not what we affirm, and that's not what we're after. We just recently honored one of our men who is an usher, Richard Cook, and he's faithful. He's positive. He's just a great guy. He's also a mayor of his small town and just a great community builder. So he was an easy one to honor and a great example for others to see, about what we want to highlight.
Yeah, well, I think the first two are easy. The last two aren't as easy. I mean, it's pretty easy to get up and make sure you say things in a way that promote vision and unity. Sure. And it's pretty easy to honor the right values and to help your people come to balance. But the truth is, this third one is hard. And that is, if we want our people to love what they do, not get burned out, we have to develop leaders who create an atmosphere of nurture. And the truth is, in America, people feel like ministry is the pastor's job. And so it's really, really tough. And, you know, you can do a great job of teaching it, but people don't naturally feel like it's their responsibility to take care of five people. So the only way that we've known to get through that is to continue to have two things: one, Heart for the Houses every 3 months. Because by doing that, actually, there's another thing. We mentioned it already, but we celebrate volunteers every month. We celebrate our leaders three times a year, and do trainings. And then the other thing is, you guys, all the department heads, you meet with captains. And because we know that we can do everything from the platform, but in the end, when people are trying to grow through a lack of training, and a lot of people don't have the ability to balance their money or their schedules. If we don't have leaders who are really nurturing people, it's going to be hard to keep people from getting either burned out or to the point they're just not even involved.
Yeah. And the Moses model really works. I mean, it takes effort to do it, but it really does work. People taking care of people, pastoring people. But the churches, we all saw this. The churches with good connections survived COVID a lot better than those who didn't have those connections. There's no doubt about that. But we're working on leading our leaders to have, you mentioned this is so good to have personal, regular, and celebratory contact with their team members. It's important that we're aware of what's going on in their personal lives because people want to know that we know them personally, and that we're not detached, but we're involved. And that we're a constant in their life. We see them often, and then we celebrate and have set times of great fellowship together. That can really hold teams together, leaders and teams together. You talked about the Bloom taxonomy. I don't know if you want to mention that or not, but you could
Yeah, well,
explain
Bloom's
that.
text, what it talks about in the educational world is just that, success isn't, it doesn't go like this, right? It's like you go through ups and downs and you go around what they learned in the educational world is that it's not a matter of a teacher giving information to a student, but how you develop the fellowship around that student really to a great degree determines that their success or their failure. So they've learned the importance of creating fellowship within the classroom, and they have lots of studies that have shown that it's not just how the teacher puts forth information. So again, we could be in a platform and it's pleasant and it's promoting unity and it's promoting balance, but then does that person have somebody who's helping them process a call of God in their life? Does that person have anybody who says to them, "Hey, thank you for being at this door every week and making people feel so loved as they come in. Hey, thank you for changing the diapers." That's what the captains have to bring.
That's really good. I agree. I think it's really, really important. People feel appreciated, and as leaders, as their leaders, when we appreciate them, man, it just makes such a huge difference in their life because everybody wants to be involved and make it a difference,
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this up. And again, we try to do this like it's our lunch break. So we just like to feel like we're having lunch with a bunch of pastors, which we are. And we hope this helped you think about the spirit of your church and helped you think about the structure of it. Thank you for the wonderful comments some of y'all have been sending us. But here's the final thing, and that is not only do we have to develop leaders who create an atmosphere of nurture, but it's important that you nurture cooperation and collaboration within the church. Because, man alive, one of the things that gets people mad and burns them out is just that the departments aren't collaborative in how they work on things. So, the youth program shows up and the outreach department took something that belonged to the youth program. So it's important that you teach your church how important it is that we stay refreshing and that we stay collaborative. I mean, Ephesians 4 says this, and it's so true. In Ephesians 4:16, it says the church builds itself up as each part does its work. And it was a great day when I realized I couldn't have celebration services good enough to make people want to be together if they didn't get along. If they didn't, and it wasn't going to happen if we never took it on. It wasn't going to happen like you talked about using the offering. That's what I used. And people's heads will start doing this when you just talk about how you want things to be. So again, I hope this helps, but use your offering, celebrate a volunteer every month, have a few heart for the houses. And if you start working on those four things, it'll take time, but probably not as long as you think it will to get the kind of environment you want where people are in balance, they're having a great time, they're changing the world.
It's really just a big family, isn't it? That you're just you're just teaching and training a family like a parent. And I tell you, it's so worth it to have the love and the community and the opportunity to do something for God like we do. But it takes a lot of love and leadership to do that. So anyway, I want to just say thank you to all the amazing pastors and leaders who are listening to us today. And just thank you for the amazing work you're doing in your community where you've been called. Without you, I know your community would be a different place. So we just love you. We honor you and just are blessed to be connected to you. We pray you have an awesome Easter.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to wrap it up. This is Palm Sunday weekend. And just to let everybody know, next webinar, we're going to talk about building high performance teams. So we're going to talk about, okay, this week, don't burn them out, but how do you make your teams better? So we're going to look forward to talking about that. But Tamara, we had three questions come in. Just bounce them off you. Here's number one. What are ideas for recruiting volunteers? What are your thoughts?
Well, why don't you start and I'll think.
Okay. I'd say, first of all, your best recruiters are the people who are already volunteering. So I think good pre-service huddles where before people began, get your volunteers here early, brag on them, talk about what happened next week, keep it all upbeat with pre-service huddles, and then talk to them about looking for volunteers for you, because the best recruiters you have are people who are already doing it because they're passionate about doing it. That would be.
And Jim, we have people who go to our next steps who are leaders and become leaders, and they do a great job of talking about what, you know, being a team leader has meant to them, and it just kind of draws people in. So it's
just a great I think most people have the whole growth track, next step track. I think most churches have that. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. But if you don't have it, I for sure would encourage you to do that, because people take gift assessments. They find their place. It gives you a chance to really, really help people get into their ministries. Here's the second question. What is a realistic amount of time for volunteers to serve? And does it vary?
Well, I know we do this sit one, serve one. Yeah. And so, I mean, some can do it weekly, some can do it bi-monthly. But we always encourage, you know.
Yeah, I think sit one, serve one's a really good start, you know, especially for young parents, because it's hard to build the kind of children and youth programs if you don't have sit one, serve one parents. I know Rick Burke, his daughter's building an amazing children's program. I'm just going to give her a shout out. But, you know, his church is maybe 1,500 people, but they've got 52 adults and 42 kids that are working in their children's ministry every week. But they've really mastered sit one, serve one. And when we hit that point about make it a fellowship where everybody loves being a part of it together, feels like a big family. I mean, we were there. She's amazing at it, you know? And so I think you're right that sit one, serve one, especially for children's ministries, nurseries. One thing I've done in the church for the other kind of ministries is I always use our band as an example, because if you don't have good worship music, it's going to be hard to build a good church. Yeah. And you're probably not going to have good worship music if your band isn't putting a few hours into coming together throughout the week. So I've always kind of used that. I've encouraged people, you know, hey, don't you appreciate our band? And then I just talk about the time they gave. Man, I'm excited there are other teams that are forming, that are leading small groups, that are ministering in various ways because of, but I've used the band as a baseline to motivate the other ministries.
Yeah, that's good. That's really
okay.
Good.
Here's the last one. We're going to be done today. And that is, what are some things you do to resource and encourage the volunteers in your church?
Well, I mean, we do Heart for the House. That's always a big deal. We do, we do captains and leaders meetings. We meet with our captains once or twice a month, and that just keeps us together, keeps us encouraged. We brag on them. We huddle. That's another thing that we do before every service. And so all those things, I think, are an encouragement to them. And
yeah, I'll just kind of list them just because I know for me, I know a lot of guys like me, I just want to make a list and think about maybe what I can add to it. But huddles are important. Mm-hmm. Celebrating a volunteer every month is important. Three Heart for the Houses a year is important. And then I think the one thing that you do really well is you write a letter. It's based on the message the week before or something, but you actually write something that all of our leaders can use in the huddles before service, the leader's letter. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's usually, I just take it's about 200 to 400 words, and I just take it off of our staff meeting usually. And it's just, you know, just like we have culture statements that we use that are really short and just keep you on track. We choose joy. We honor up, down, and around. They're just some great culture statements. So I've been taking one of those and just talking a little bit about them and just thanking them really for what they do and how they're doing that and how they're leading in that way. And so usually it's just a little bit encouragement, but it gives the captains and the leaders something to talk to their team about during the huddles.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, because we email every leader who's going to have a huddle. We email them every weekend and they get the 240 words from you, but they also get things to celebrate that happened in church.
Yeah,
how many
right.
people got saved, give me a testimony of something that happened at the ladies' conference, all that kind of stuff. So it's just a short little thing we prepare for them every weekend, but it makes them know that we're thinking about them. You know, it makes them know that we appreciate them and also nurtures maturity in them because it may only sound like, let's say 300 words, you know, let's just go to the middle of what you talked about. But 300 times 52, you just read half a book in the course of the year, you know, so at least a shorter book.
And we always share care prayer is what we do in our huddles. And that's just that's just a good little formula for, you know, keeping your team on task and really keeping it together. And it's not over how many minutes is our huddle, not very long, but it really kind of pulls people together. Yeah. Keeps them on the same page and just makes them helps them focus on what they're doing, why they're doing what they do.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Well, I think we're done. It was good. Thank you, Tamara, for coming on with me today. I know we're both jet lagged, so we made it. We got through it. And all of you who are on today, man, it's so good talking to you. All of our local connectors, thank you guys so much for what you do. Thank you for pastoring your church. Thank you for caring about pastors. We love you with all of our heart. We're so encouraged by what God's doing through the network right now, what God's doing across America and around the world. So we love you. Have an incredible Passion Week, and we'll see you after Easter.